Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, a podcast all about a life following Watford Football Club. It's our take on life as a Watford fan. My name is John, and on a Sunday, the day after Watford lost 1-0 away at Millwall, is Mike.
Day after Watford lost, yes, but also the day after Hemel Storm won the basketball at the Storm Dome, overcoming their local rivals, Thames Valley Cavaliers, and also Cheshire United won to go 17, I think it is, or 15 points clear at the top of the Southern Premier Division. So all is not lost in the world of Mike Sport. Good morning.
You say that, Mike, but I bet you you are, even though they're 17 points clear, you're still looking...
Oh, I've worked out how quickly that can evaporate. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. For this podcast, we're joined by Adam Drury. Good morning, Adam.
Morning, John. I've not got too much more to add, I'm afraid, so just a depressing Sunday morning for me.
Well, you were at the game yesterday. Both of you were at the game yesterday. I was listening on the old wireless. Adam, before that, you know, we haven't spoken to you for a while. Before that game, when you were heading your way to the new, but not that new, not shiny and new, at least, den.
30 years old, John, now.
Is it 30?
Yep.
Oh, wow. I thought it was like 25 or like 20, 25. Like, not there. Wow. Where was your head at before today, yesterday's game? And I don't mean just that game, but the last couple of weeks, let's say.
It's difficult because I think you get influenced by external news that maybe isn't coming from the club. So we all saw the reports last week about Ishmael potentially losing his job after the Huddersfield game. And so I think I came into yesterday almost thinking, feeling like we're in crisis mode, which maybe isn't fair because that wasn't the messaging coming from Val himself or from the team. And actually the team news was quite interesting because he talked this week about having made changes, had conversations on the training pitch, maybe trying something new. And actually the 4-2-3-1 shape with Asprilla playing centrally off Bio was a change. It's something we've seen later in games this season. So I was quite intrigued to see how that played out. So I guess there's almost a little bit of hope because you think you might have hit rock bottom and it can't possibly be worse than last Saturday. I don't think we'll play worse than last Saturday this season, to be fair. And we didn't yesterday.
That sounds like a challenge, Adam.
I know. Well, if Watford, if any club's going to accept that challenge, it's Watford, maybe. I felt a kind of almost a freedom about it because it felt like we'd bottomed out last week and all the stuff about Val. And I did think the team selection was quite refreshing. It's a shame the way the game played out. We never really got to see it in action the way it would have been planned all week because we made a terrible start and 5 minutes in we're 1-0 down. And the plan probably never was executed the way it was meant to be. But I felt sort of more intrigued, I'd say, by the team and the build-up to the game than at other times this season.
Well, let's see how Mike was, because we often talk about on From the Weekend, the WhatsApp group, the magical WhatsApp group, the mythical WhatsApp group. And as I continually try to tell you, we sometimes hear very pessimistic Mike on this podcast, but he is a man of many, many shades. So I said to him, Mike, what are you going to do throughout the whole game tomorrow? I want you to send me little tiny messages of where you are, what you're at, how you're feeling, as if it's an audio version of you on WhatsApp during a game. So this is what Mike was like during the game yesterday.
It's match day again, and I'm absolutely buzzing. And yes, Millwall away is the exact opposite of the game we probably needed. But I don't think it matters if you support Watford, Wolves, West Ham, Walton or Hersham, Wimbledon, whatever. When match day comes around, the feeling is always the same. It's that sort of feeling that anything could happen. It's not expectation, it's kind of just hope that whatever does happen is enjoyable and is good fun. And look, I'm just glad to be back on the road. I'm glad it's match day again. Come on, you Wands. It's a beautiful day here. The sun is shining, bright blue skies, glorious weather, sort of a bit of wind, but yeah, it's just really, really pleasant. And it's hard not to be feeling sort of like quite happy and upbeat about being at the game, just arriving at the stadium and having to wander around. It's actually got a really nice feel to it. Obviously it's Millwall and Millwall will always be Millwall, but looking forward to this, you know. Saturday, 3 o'clock, we're in Millwall. Where else would you rather be? Come on, you Wards. 3:03. Could probably think of places I'd rather be than at Millwall. Absolutely amazing atmosphere. So if nothing else, it's like a good old giggle. But Watford up against it already. This may surprise you to hear, but 20 minutes gone and I'm still hopeful. Watford have actually reacted pretty well to the going behind. I ain't giving up on this one just yet. I'm starting to think I'm a bit of a jinx ever since I said Watford are doing all right. Watford fans starting to get a little bit agitated with the way that the reticence to get the ball forward. Watford just giving away a corner when they didn't really need to. So I'm probably going to keep my thoughts to myself for a little bit. So yeah, sorry lads. This sort of change in momentum is on me. I'll take the blame. It looks like Ryan Andrews is getting ready to come on. So, like, how am I feeling? Kind of drifting a little bit and kind of going the way that maybe you'd expect it. Don't know. Just need a spark. Need a spark from somewhere. 78 minutes on the clock. The Millwall keeper's just had to make a save, which is nice. Well, into the last minute here at the Den. But we've seen why Rajovic has kept and Healy was sold, perhaps. Rajovic has got an absolutely enormous throw. He brought on a sub and he came over to take a throw-in. Everyone was wondering why he wasn't in the box and was taking the throw-in. Rajovic, our secret weapon from the long throw. 4 minutes added. I don't think it really matters. Yeah, pretty much as you were. I just thought the Rajovic throwing thing was vaguely interesting. What, a couple of the players coming over to clap the away fans, getting met with pretty much universal abuse. Not very Watford fans, really unhappy here. Really unhappy. Really unhappy. So pretty ugly really here at the end. It's Mel Kone holding his hand up there, patting the badge. Just saying, stick with it. Millwall 1, Watford 0. This pretty dismal run continues.
Yeah. Now, Mike, you know, that definitely showed off. You weren't all doom and gloom, even though 1-0 down after 3 minutes. I love your chuckle that you have at the end there. But you were optimistic for quite a long time after that. And, you know, it's interesting, Adam sort of, the sort of hope that we had around the game, or maybe lack of, you know, need to win the game, let's say, maybe, that sort of came through with you as well. But what's fascinating, I suppose, for me, listening to you, then at the very, very end clip there, where you sort of, you're saying what's going on, you can hear the sort of anger from the Watford fans, and you do that, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah. I think there's a massive contrast in Watford fans at the moment. There's that contrast of pure anger and upset because of what we're seeing isn't particularly nice to watch. But then also we've got this, a certain group, and no one's wrong, of course, but they're just acceptance of it. Is it acceptance or is it more like just, what is it for you?
I don't think it's acceptance. And I think that my sort of groan at the end of it sums up where we're all at different levels. We are all Watford supporters, and that means we all want Watford to be winning football matches and doing well and just being okay and being good and having plans for the future. And look, this podcast is about our life as a Watford fan, and yet that was my life as a Watford fan yesterday. And yes, there was a little bit of self-censoring, I'll be honest. But I enjoyed yesterday. The sun was shining. Going to the Den is actually quite good fun these days, as I tried to get across in the message. They've done a really, really good job of just making the Den as welcoming as the Den is ever going to be. The atmosphere was good. Arlo was enjoying it, having a good old sing-song. It was a good day out, so I enjoyed that. And I think it's important for me, personally, that you're able to get that out of watching football. And I was able to get that yesterday. However, and this is a massive, massive however, I think the reason that I'm able to do that is largely because I've parked the importance of results quite a while ago this season. I never really believed that this side was deep enough, strong enough or good enough to realistically challenge for the playoffs. So I never had that worry. And up until yesterday, I didn't think we were going to get sucked into a relegation battle either. So I've been able to go to games with the express intention of enjoying the day. Enjoying seeing you guys, enjoying seeing the family, maybe going for a beer or some food before, went to Sheffield Wednesday with Colin and Ollie, for example. So I've gone with the express intention of enjoying the day, because my concerns, my fears and upset are channeled towards the longer term future of the football club. I think that's where the bigger issues lie. We saw Gino, Scott and Modji Bayat sat in the director's box yesterday watching a side that has been underinvested in. There's been no investment in the team of note really for 2 or 3 years now. The team and the club and us as supporters are suffering really as a result of that. And you can look at that particular agent who sat there. You can bet your bottom dollar that whilst there's not much going into the team, there is potentially money going the other way for specific individuals. And the finances of the club are a huge concern, not maybe this year, potentially not even next year, but the year after that. And the way that gets dealt with can only mean diminishing returns on the pitch. So I think what I'm getting at is, on a basic level, I'm able to go and enjoy the football. On a macro level, I'm really, really concerned about the direction of the football club. And I think that's where... And then there's the micro issue, which is Val and the team and what's happening on the pitch. So if you mangle those macro and micro issues together, long-term concerns, you know, the stuff that keeps you awake at night, combined with the stuff that you see on the pitch yesterday, that's where the sort of anger comes from, and it manifests itself in very, very different ways. I'm, on the face of it, sanguine, going to enjoy the football. Other people are intensely angry, and both are absolutely fine. But I think it's really important for me that we identify what's happening on the pitch is a direct result of what's happening at the top. And we need to keep our eyes wide open and our minds sharp as to what's going on here, and not get too caught up in the minutiae, and really look clearly with crystal clear, not analysis, but get our heads around what's going on here. We've got macro problems which are potentially catastrophic, I think, for the football club. We've got micro issues which are now a real, real problem with Valerian Ismail and the team. We are 6 points off relegation. We could be speaking this time next week if things go really, really badly. We could be in the relegation zone, theoretically. So those issues are now being brought into incredibly sharp focus as well. So there's a lot going on, and I think it calls for calm heads, but also the working out how we deal with this as supporters. What are the next steps? Do we redouble our efforts when we're at Vicarage Road or in the away end in terms of support? Emmanuel Dennis spoke after the game yesterday about how he found it sort of understandable but difficult to see the anger from the stands, and there was absolutely no getting away from it from him, that he recognised why Watford fans were upset, and the players, Ismail Kone was notable. Adam, you were there yesterday, you'll have seen it. He came and did a slow walk in front of the away fans. He didn't look away from the torrent of abuse that was headed his way. So, and Wes Hurt did that thing that you often see in Italy or Spain, where the ultras dish out their condemnation from the stands, and you just stand there and they take it, don't you, on the continent. They almost line up and they take their medicine. And Wes Hurt did that for a bit. He sort of stood there, chin up, hand on hips, taking it. So look, I don't think there's any issue with the players being understanding where we're at. I don't think there's any issues with Val understanding where we're at. But at every level, things need to change. And me being able to enjoy a day out at football is great. But for the future of the immediate and long-term future of Watford, there are huge things, there are huge issues that need fixing, and some of them need to be fixed pretty quick.
Well, the trouble is, though, Mike, lots of things, for lots of Watford fans, they don't will look at Twitter as much as we do. And actually, it's the week in, the week out, the game they see, home or away, you know, that is all they care about. And I'm understanding of that. And I suppose, like you say, the bigger picture stuff is very slow to change. And what managers do and what teams and players try to do is try to deal with the micro stuff on a weekly basis. And in theory, that's what we talk about every single week. We're trying to pick things apart. So, you know, we can't change the macro things quickly. They are there. They are part of our thinking. They are part of influencing our feelings. But there were sort of changes made yesterday, which got a, again, not better, but a better than the previous week's performance, Adam. Yeah, three major changes. One was Ngakia was back. The other one was the fact that Asprilla was, say, central in a midfield slash attack. And Bio back starting. Let's start with the back there. I mean, yes, Hamer should have done a lot better with their goal. But defensively, Ngakia maybe in particular, did you see any major problems or anything that would be must be addressed in that defence, apart from some better quality, really?
Not necessarily with Ngakia coming in. I actually thought he had one crazy minute in the first half where him and Hamer kind of collided and the ball rolled back towards the goal. And then a almost pantomime moment when he had possession on the edge of his own box and I can't remember the move, behind him. It's like those goals you see when the goalie rolls it out and doesn't know the striker's behind and the entire stadium can see it coming. Other than that, I thought he was actually... I've always quite liked him, and I think when he gets a run of games, he looks like a decent player. Clearly, the issue since we signed him is his fitness record, which means I don't think he's ever played more than 20 games in a season for us, and that's largely injuries rather than not being of a decent enough calibre to play. And actually, in the second half, I thought he grew into it. I like the way he runs inside, kind of drives at goal when he's got a wide option outside him. So I thought he did quite well. Clearly, the contentious issue is the fact that Ryan Andrews now hasn't started, I think, any of the last seven matches. I really like Ryan Andrews. I think, personally, he would be my first choice right back because I think the pace and directness he brings to the team almost shakes things up. I think we're a team that can get quite stodgy and quite static and passive. And he brings a real drive and momentum down the right-hand side with his pace. I like it most when he's playing there. But also, I think it can go understated with all the chat around him that less than a year ago, he made his first team debut. A year ago, we weren't talking about him at all. And remember the problems we had at right back last season when we had Dan Gosling playing there, Craig Cathcart playing there. I think we used six or seven players at right back before Andrews even had a look in. And it wasn't like there was any kind of clamour for him to be involved before he was. So it's very, very early in his professional career. And yes, it's been a kind of extended absence now, but I do think there is a... Maybe until the last couple of games where I thought, OK, I'd quite like to see him back in the side. There is a duty of care to someone who's in their first year as a pro, and we can't just be chucking them in because we don't have any other decent alternatives while Ngakia is out. So that's kind of my take on Andrews. But with Ngakia back in the team, yeah, I thought he did well. And it was quite interesting that Val said afterwards that he is the first choice right back, and he was quite explicit about that.
Because it's fascinating, Mike. We talked about Andrews on the podcast with Matt Furness. Matt approaching it, you know, from that statistical point of view, and that's fascinating because I think we all look at, you know, at Ryan in a way where he's one of our own, and we love that, and we have a much more emotion towards him than we normally do. And it was fascinating actually. Last couple of days, loads of people on Twitter, when their complaints were going on about why is it, and people saying, oh, you should listen to the latest from the Rooker End because they talk about it there and they talk about maybe why.
People yeah. should always listen to the latest from the Rooker End, not just when we've got Matt blithering on about how terrible Ryan Andrews is. I think you and Adam are both right. Adam has articulated from a tactical and performance point of view why Ryan Andrews is so clearly popular in terms of, I mean, it's pretty basic, really. He's pacey, he's direct, he's confident. He looks more of a footballer than Jeremy Ngakia, who's got a touch of the Lloyd Doyleys about him in terms of how he runs and holds himself. Ryan Andrews looks like more of an athlete, and it feels like more stuff is happening when he's on the team. I personally think, and again, my view is bigger and macro, so this is my personal view, is that the right back issue is ultimately a bit of a red herring. And I think you're right, John, to use the word emotion. I think you used. We love him because he's Wayne Andrews' son, and some of us of a certain age can remember watching Wayne Andrews play and score for Watford with his electric pace. Also played for Cheshire United, actually, for a period, if I remember correctly. He is one of our own, and that means something to us as football supporters. We're a weird old bunch. We cling on to particular things, but he is one of ours, and therefore we are predisposed to want success for him. You marry that with what Adam said about how he performs on the pitch, and yeah, it's easy to see why he's hugely popular in a short space of time. However, Val clearly doesn't fancy him for a number of reasons. Whatever they are, we'll never be privy to, really. He said yesterday, as Adam said, that Jeremy Ngakoue is his first choice. Matt has made the case from a data point of view as to why there might be some things informing Val's decision not to play him at right back. And quite frankly, having watched Watford a lot this season, right back and the defence probably isn't the biggest worry that I think we should have. As a rule, for what we've got available, the defence has been okay. It's been fine. You mentioned Ben Hamer yesterday, could have saved the goal. And ironically, probably Dan Backman saves that. So there's another little hand grenade for people to talk about. But I think this right back issue is, for me, what I'm trying to do is to stay calm and ultimately stay out of it. Because I understand the emotion and I understand the debate around it. And you could argue that it's sort of indicative of Val getting everything wrong or a lot wrong with his team selection and his team setup. But I don't necessarily think it's a big problem. And I think talking about staying clear and trying to keep our eyes on what the big issues are, it's sort of, there's another storm last night when Ryan's dad, Wayne, who we mentioned earlier, tweeted something about Ryan won't let himself be bullied. And that was taken from those supporters online for him to suggest that he is being bullied or someone is trying to bully him. And so that then shifted the, and again, we're talking about online, so this is a very, very small percentage of Watford fans. But that very quickly shifted on the back of another defeat, another away day defeat, on the back of another turgid performance that was an improvement on Huddersfield, it's fair to say. That shifted very quickly the feeling against Val, because there had been a suggestion out there that Ryan Andrews was being bullied, which is a very, very emotive word. And it gets people's emotions up, and quite rightly so. What it actually turns out that Wayne Andrews deleted that message and then sort of responded saying it was based on a tweet he'd seen from another Watford supporter suggesting that he'd heard something that Ryan Andrews was being bullied. So his dad, Ryan Andrews' dad, has basically gone, look, if that's what you've heard, I won't let it happen. He won't let it happen. So I don't think he was suggesting, Wayne Andrews wasn't starting this conversation about whether he's being bullied. He was saying he won't let him be. And that's different. And I just think that is indicative of all the noise that is around the place at the moment, all the noise that is around Val, the team and the club and the direction of travel as a whole. And that's kind of what I mean. And it's, I'm talking to myself, remind myself to stay clear, keep your eyes on what is actually impactful and important for the football club. And yes, the right back debate is an interesting one. It is one that is well worth having. But Adam, you think Ryan Andrews should start. I might think that Ngakoue should start. John, you might think that Tom Delibashiru might start.
I think Rajovic should start.
Well, sticking him on to take throw-ins, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, we'll do about throw-in in a minute, yeah.
But the point is, everyone has got a different opinion. You could talk about the eye test. You can talk about the data, which we did in the week with Matt. So there isn't a right answer to who plays at right back. The only answer is who Val picks. And ultimately, whoever he picks at right back, I don't think is, if Ryan Andrews starts the game on Wednesday against Swansea, for example, I don't all of a sudden think we're going to be seeing an amazing football team without other changes. If he'd started at right back on Saturday against Millwall, does that change the outcome of the game, Adam, for you?
No, I don't think so. Wasn't the key factor, was it? Interestingly, the club have just put out quotes from Ishmael on Andrew specifically. He says he is one of the really good young talents at this club right now, which is why we need to take care of him. Taking care of a young player can mean sometimes giving him a break from playing in the team. Every player has his ups and downs in form. You cannot expect a teenager to play so many games at the same level. Ryan can be very pleased with his first full season as a professional. And it sort of goes on like that. So kind of what we were saying that...
Looking and ultimately, after, what he's saying there, is he's dropped him. He's dropped him, but he's dropped him for his own good because he doesn't think his levels have been up there. Now, that may or may not be what we see in the stands or what other people see in the stands, but that is what he's saying. He's saying he's dropped him because, and if, let's remember, he sees him week in, week out in training. He's close to him. I think Valerian Ismail, as far as I can tell, he strikes me as quite a good man manager. We've seen it with our own eyes what he was able to do earlier in the season in terms of galvanising this side. We've seen that he was able to turn it round after that mini blip against, you know, the horror shows against Leeds and Sunderland, which we referenced so often and we were worried about. He did galvanise the side after that.
And he also brought lots of players back. He's, you know, he has, you know, Tom Delibashiru, you know, a player who was out of favour for behaviour, let's say, but he has not completely shoved them away. He hasn't completely there. He's almost like, look, you misbehaved, and he said he's told them off with his arm around them. It feels like to me, and that sort of brought Tom back in to the point where Tom's like going, yeah, of course I'm going to play at right back for you, even though I've never really played there before, or at least, you know, in the last couple of years not played there before. I'm sure he was like eight, but I think that tells me that part of him rather than the picking a player tells me all about Valerian than anything else.
I've been quite protective of Valerian Ismail over this issue, and I'm kind of sticking my neck out a little bit. But what it doesn't, but what I understand the frustration with it is that he does seem to be getting the rest wrong, really, with the way that he's asking this Watford side to play. So I think that does feed into, I'm suggesting on one hand that we have to trust him because he's making his decision. It's a subjective decision. He makes it and we have to trust him. But on the other hand, what we're seeing is the side is presumably being asked to play in a way that is delivering up performances and results that are miles away from what we need. And even with this squad, miles away from what we should expect, I think, really.
Yeah, we did talk about on a WhatsApp group about, you know, plan A, plan B. You know, there doesn't seem to be a plan B. There's tweaks to something. Like he's more, almost, Adam, you know, holding himself to the way he wants to play. And I suppose for the first time, as you mentioned, you know, starting with Asprilla in the, you know, just behind, you know, it's almost like a... Did you see, I saw it was a 4-2-3-1 in a sort of an attacking mode. Do you think, though, with Asprilla that, you know, DCW is adamant, like he needs to be the first player on the team sheet. Again, young player, probably protected here, there, and for certain situations. Do you think yesterday you saw something more dramatic because, you know, from Asprilla, or more ability to have more options with him because we got to see him rather than just being that thing at the end of the game where we're trying to push or something, but from the beginning of the game, another string to his bow?
Yeah, I actually agree with DCW that he should be probably front and centre of this Watford team now for a couple of reasons. Firstly, I think he's our most creative player, and actually being given that central role gave him a little bit more freedom to kind of drift to each side and interact with the wide players with Semmer and Dennis on each flank. I also think taking a wider view of the football club as Mike's been doing, promoting the players who are going to be worth quite a lot of money to us and our assets has to be the way to go. We need to be showcasing these guys in a way that top clubs are going to be looking at them and saying, we want to buy that player for quite a lot of money from you, because I think that's going to be key to the way we function over the next few years. You know, we've already announced the signing of a young striker this summer who we probably hope is going to be the next player we go on to sell. I've no idea whether he will be, but I think that conveyor belt is something we really need to get moving again, because it can't be the case. You know, we talked about we've seen the financial stuff over the last few weeks and how the player sales last year kind of sustained us through this season. That's going to continue being key. So Asprilla is someone who I think we really need to showcase as much as possible. And I did actually see, I think, signs of improvement from him in the middle of the pitch. I liked the way, as I say, he drifted to each side. I liked the way he picks up the ball in pockets of space. I still think we'd be getting even more out of him with, I didn't think Bayo had a bad game, but a centre forward who runs in behind and is athletic and really runs the channels in a way where Espria can get his head up, take it on the half turn and ping a through ball in behind. I think that's one of Espria's best assets. And you see him so often this season pick the ball up and think, what am I actually aiming for here? Have to take an extra touch, have to move backwards. So there are elements of the team around him that would I think, improve him even more. But I think he and Kone are the two who really want to see play on a regular basis now.
He looked the most likely to unlock something yesterday, didn't he, Adam? We sort of built up a bit of a head of steam. We actually reacted pretty well to going behind, I thought Millwall did a fantastic job in... They started the game at a really, really high tempo. The crowd was up. The atmosphere was bubbling. The first home game back for Neil Harris. And Millwall got on the front foot for those first 3 or 4 minutes. It was the pace was very, very high. Watford were chasing shadows to a degree. Kayembe was sort of lured into a sort of rash tackle after about a minute, I think it probably was,
less,
Adam, 90
less.
Seconds or so.
Yeah, a harsh early book.
It was right in front of that sort of the noisy part of the Millwall crowd, just to the left of the away fans. Noisy crowd, I say. What I did notice, and I think someone else picked up on this, I meant to take a photo. I have to look at some of the photos I took myself. So to direct, if you haven't been to the Den, if you, the away fans are behind the goal, and directly to the left is where the noisy Millwall fans go, and I think to the right as well. They position themselves close to the away fans just for maximum effect. If you look to the left, you could see, and I'm pretty sure there was like four microphones dangling down from the ceiling, and presumably that's to sort of amplify the crowd noise, whether it's on their videos or whether they do something with it in the crowd, I don't know. But there's definitely microphones hanging down from the ceiling, which takes me back to talking about bad times ahead for Watford. Looking back when they experimented with playing crowd noise through the tannoy at home, good grief, that was bleak. But anyway, I digress. Not like me, I know. But so Millwall thundered off at a million miles an hour. Kayembe got a booking, which was almost certainly to appease the baying mob, to sort of say, "Come on, don't worry, don't focus on me as the ref today. I am going to be looking after you, so I will do." I thought it was a pathetic booking at that stage in the game. But Watford were sort of bent out of shape already. A minute, 90 seconds later, they concede the foul in the long way out, and they score from the resultant free kick. Now, that came from Millwall just going at Watford and Watford not being able to settle, which is fair play to Millwall. That's what you want. Massive game for them. They will have said in the dressing room, get out there, million miles an hour, don't let them hit their straps. They did it. They scored from it. We probably should have kept it out. And I think we keep that goal out, Watford win the game or it's a draw, because that's all they had to do. To give Watford credit, for they came back into the game almost immediately, really, after the goal. Adam mentioned the calamitous mix-up between Ngakia and Hamer, and Ngakia getting his pocket picked. We did well to get back and to stop that being 2-0, and that really would have been game over. But really, from that point on, Watford were incredibly comfortable and looked neat and tidy and had pretty much the lion's share of the ball. Lion's share of the ball. Millwall didn't have... Hamer didn't really have a save to make. But also, neither did the Millwall keeper. He didn't have to make a save that is, and I'm not joking, the saves he had to make, any three of us would have made them. You were basically falling on the ball, and that was it. So whilst Watford did look good, they made absolutely nothing in the way of a telling final attack on goal. To go back to the main point, Yasser Espria looked the most likely to unlock that. But what Watford are unable to do is move defences around quick enough for him to be effective in that role. He looks like he knows what he wants to do. He looks comfortable on the ball. He is nimble. He's skillful. He knows the passes that he wants to make. He knows what he wants to do. But the space isn't there because we aren't able to move it around quickly. There is no... The transition to attack is so ponderous and so lethargic. And ultimately, it looks pretty clueless. I know that's not the case. They work on it. And the idea is you keep possession and you forge it. You keep possession for long enough and you move the ball around until you get into a position where you attack and you score. Well, we do the possession bit relatively okay. We knock the ball around relatively okay. But in terms of our ideas, when it comes to getting the ball in the box in a meaningful way to take a shot, there's nothing. We tried a few little things. I think there was a chance. We had a really good free kick in the second half on the edge of the box, and we tried something clever. Jamal Lewis tried. He played it square instead of it going. Everyone thought it was going into the box. It looked like it was going to be left foot whipped into the box, penalty area. Hopefully someone gets a nod on it. Tried to sort of play a sharp pass laterally with the idea that we moved the defence around. But it just misplaced the pass, and it just looked awful. And every time that we got the ball into wide areas, it either came back or the ball into the box was poor. I think Emmanuel Dennis had one in the first half where he got some really good space into the right, put the ball in, and there was no one there, but he certainly didn't find it anywhere close to a Watford shirt. So this Asprilla is going to be key to unlocking whatever attacking prowess we have. But this goes back to being defensive about Val earlier and also critical of him now. He's the one that works with this lot on the training ground all week. He is the one that tells them how to play. He is the one that talks to them about patterns, tactics, how we're going to ultimately do what football is about, sticking the ball in the opposition's net. And if he doesn't change, or if he doesn't try to change, we're just going to carry on seeing what we see. I think there is an element, and Adam, I'd like your view on this. I think there is an element of a team like Millwall having scored early. It's such a massive game for them in a relegation battle that they would have been happy to have got that lead and just sit in and make it very, very difficult for us. It was congested. And for a team like Watford, who is struggling anyway, playing against that is difficult, but and potentially we should look better against a better side. But how much was it down to Millwall suffocating us, and how much is it down to us just putting the bag over our own heads? Because I ultimately think it's more the latter, really.
I did feel for Val in the sense, as I mentioned earlier, they'd clearly worked on a different plan this week to start the game, and it's undermined inside 5 minutes because of a crazy goal we concede, really, where Asprilla, I think, is partly to blame as well. Don't know if you've seen it back, but he basically completely turns his back on it in the wall. And it's yes, deflected from him, still a long way enough from goal that Hamer, I think, could get across. But to concede that goal when you know that we're going to have to ride a bit of a storm in the first few minutes, their first home game with Neil Harris back, the crowd's up, just get through that spell. For that to be the goal we concede was very frustrating. And I think from there, it was an improvement on last week, but I also think that is a bit of an illusion, because I do think, as you've touched on, they had us exactly where they wanted us in terms of the chances we created, how much their goalkeeper actually had to work. It reminded me a little bit of playing Sean Dyche's Burnley side in the Premier League. I remember when they came back up under Sean Dyche the second time, I remember we went up there and lost on a Monday night, and they did a real job on us in a similar way where they snuffed us out. And then balls were going down the channels. They'd all chase up the pitch, keep us down there. You know, it was quite efficient defensive football. And I thought they were really impressive how compact they were and how comfortably they kept us out. You know, never felt like we were. There was one spell, I think, early in the second half where we generated a bit of momentum, but never resulted in a big chance. And I do think you talked a little bit there about what they're doing on the training ground. And I do wonder whether a big part of the job Ishmael's had to do at Watford this year overall is improvement on standards and discipline. And a word he uses a lot is stability, and making sure that we're not a side like last year that would go a goal down and just fall apart. We stay in games. We've come from behind at times this season. But I do wonder if that mentality is now bleeding out onto the field in a bad way, in the sense that we look quite inflexible. We look very disciplined, very structured, but almost to the point where we're running out of ideas once that framework stops working.
Val mentioned post-match essay about confidence. And there is that sort of thing where as a collective, you know, if you don't have that confidence in yourself, in each other, When you are put in those situations, it's great, as you say, Adam, we're not falling into that trap of, as we did, it felt last year, just going crazy and just be absolute mayhem. It is a lot more controlled. So they're going back to safety rather than going gun-ho and trying to figure it out. And that comes down to, you know, Val particularly was talking about the attack, about goals, and how if we'd scored a goal, if we got our goal, it would just help with that confidence to have a go at goal, which we're not necessarily having a go enough, you know, just trying to score goals.
It's very low margin, isn't it? Because that's basically reliant on getting that first goal or finding the moment. And probably in our spells of good form this season, they've come when at the key moment we've scored the goal. And then, yeah, maybe you grow in confidence. But I think back to wins earlier in the season, like the win at Swansea where we score late, the win against Sheffield Wednesday at home when we score late, even the Preston game, which where we ran out comfortable looking winners in the end. That was a tight game, and at halftime you couldn't have called which way that was going to go. And maybe it is confidence, or maybe it's just how the ball falls. Sometimes it goes in, and then yeah, you're on the up in the game. But I think, as you say, I don't think it's defensive football, but it's safe football, it's stodgy football, and then it's relying on you being the team that finds the moment. And I don't think that is what the best teams are doing. The best teams are absolutely able to dictate the game on their terms, and it seems to me that. Yeah. At the moment, we're kind of going into the game, stodging it up, and then we almost see which way it goes, and that's the way it ends up, because we're not able to change the momentum of the game. And I think, yeah, as I said, I do wonder whether that off-field focus on absolute discipline, following instruction, you know, I obviously don't know Val personally at all, but I get the impression he's quite an authoritative figure, a big stickler for discipline. And I wonder whether we've kind of lost our way in terms of that freedom of mind and trying different things and taking risks on the field. Yeah. It seems,
I agree,
safe and quite solid. And maybe that is an inevitable consequence of what he did have to bring in off the field. Because that stuff, we were a complete rabble at the end of last season, and that stuff was a necessity. But I think actually now we're seeing it play out in a disappointing way on the field.
Yeah, unforeseen consequences of fixing where we were at. And again, talking macro, micro, that's another reason to remember the macro situation, because that was allowed to foster over the entirety of the Pozzo era, really. There's been, you know, questionable culture at the football club for a very, very long time. And it sort of... It was the work. Previously, we've had players who've been so good that it's masked it. So we've put up with it and enjoyed it. We've all known it's there, really, one way or the other, behind the scenes. There's been enough. Ultimately, we've held our noses, really, when we've seen our side littered with these really good players, and we've been getting promotions and doing this, that, and the other. We've known it's there, but last year it sort of no one could ignore it anymore, and it was very, very unpalatable and one of the most unenjoyable seasons for anyone in a long time. And he has seemingly fixed that, I think. And that is no small feat. But I agree with Adam that the inflexibility is, it feels like we're shooting ourselves in the foot. And it's almost, it's hearing Adam talk, it kind of makes complete sense that they're not empowered or don't feel able to, because there are good players in that team. It's a very, 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 very thin squad, and it is now incredibly low on confidence. But there are players who have played at a high level. There are players who are talented, are skillful. I mean, watching Mateus Martins when he came on, they all feel diminished in a way. They all feel less than what they should be. And it's, I think Adam's right. That word inflexible is really, really chiming. And I think no Watford fan, I don't think, would argue with that, because we've seen what we've seen. And it's been pretty dull. And I don't, you could argue that you don't mind it's dull if you're winning 1-0, 2-1, 1-1 away from home or whatever. But when it's dull and you're losing, it's very, very difficult. And for me, ultimately, in terms of Valerian's future, I think it is probably a floating agenda item for Gino and Scott. It is probably on the table after every game. I suspect what is overriding anyone pulling the trigger is A, and I'm sort of summarizing it, what's the point? Who else are they going to get in at this stage? They've got the same constraints in terms of the squad. It's going to cost us money. We haven't got to get rid of him. It's going to cost us money that we haven't got to bring someone else in and then to sack him in whenever next year, next season. So I think it would definitely be on the table, but I think there are more cons for those guys for getting rid of Valerian Ismail than there are pros. But that said, we've got a game on Wednesday against a team in Swansea who were probably, you know, they're not in the relegation scrap like Millwall, but probably will set up in a similar way in terms of they won't be wanting, they'll be more interested potentially in not allowing us to play than anything else. And so we've got, ultimately, we've got a few days to work out how to break free of that inflexibility.
Well, you say that, Mike. It's the great thing about the Championship. The games come thick and fast, and they're always there. And you know, Adam mentioned it. It felt like actually the last two games, a unconfident side, the game plan, whatever they had, went to pot very, very quickly with the injury to Bio last week, and then this week with the very, very early goal. It would be interesting to see how it may develop if something doesn't go against them so early in a game. And the great thing is we get a chance. I'm not saying that you're tutting there, Michael, and I know what you're saying, but in this development, in this trying to get them back to where they possibly could be, it is going to take steps. And you know, I know managers, they say it as almost feels like a cliche, but it is that thing of taking one game at a time, or I think it's more like using each game one at a time to solve something, not to solve the whole lot. And yesterday, clearly changing things up, he wanted to change things. He wanted to solve certain issues in certain ways. And it all just sort of fell apart a little bit. And it just meant that he couldn't do what you want. So it is nice that this game on Wednesday, I'm going to look at it in a positive way, Michael. It is another chance, but it absolutely might all fall apart very quickly as well.
I agree that the sensible way to be a football manager is to view each game in its isolation, try and learn from the last, try and change what needs to be changed. I take issue slightly with the fact that we've come up against unsurmountable issues in the last two fixtures. Going 1-0 down after 2 minutes shouldn't mean that the whole game plan disappears out of the window. You've then got 90 plus minutes really. Millwall will alter their way they play as well, so that does change things. Watford aren't coming up against these game-changing issues in these matches. That isn't why we're struggling. Yes, the early goal against Millwall was not in the script, but you've got the whole game to fix it. You've got the whole game to remedy it. If you've been working towards playing a certain type of way, you've still got the 90 minutes to do it. Yes, Millwall will change their style of play, but Huddersfield was just abject. He tried to change something there with the two midfielders coming off. Kayembe, of course, had to be subbed again yesterday after that dodgy yellow card. But also, there's been games. Rotherham away, I was at, where we stunk there. And Sheffield Wednesday away, we stunk. Yes, the pitch was crap, but it's the same for both sides. And Sheffield Wednesday had the better options. QPR, when we won away, it's pretty dreadful. Really. So we're not coming up against things that are knocking us off our stride every week. I do understand exactly where you're coming from. And I absolutely agree with you, John, that what he needs to be doing is looking for solutions. And as Adam had articulated at the start, he did that by changing up the side. And it was a knock to lose the goal early. But the overarching theme is this, and I go back to what Adam says about the inflexibility. Keeping possession is key, so I don't mind the ball going back if you haven't got the pass on. Keep the ball, the others aren't going to score, I can guarantee you that. But you have to do something. You have to have some imagination. You have to have some willingness, ability or freedom to try something. That we're not seeing that. I've been fighting against every fibre in my being not to use this phrase, but he needs to let the handbrake off. He needs to let them play football. Defensively, they're fine. Midfield, they're okay more often than not. Let them play a bit of football and let's see what happens. It can't be any worse.
The thing is, we have seen that football this season. I remember talking, I think, with you guys very early on in September, and we were very enthused about the type of football we were playing. We looked free on the pitch, the rotation. You know, in that opening game against QPR, we score inside 30 seconds when Bio drops short, pops a little ball into Lusa, who's pulled out to the right, puts the ball in behind for Deli Bashiru. That kind of positional rotation seems completely alien to where we are now. And it is like, I think as I was just saying, I think the off-field and on-field disciplining has kind of gone hand in hand, where when that process begun to look a little bit ragged, and that Sunderland game where he held them after the game for an hour, it's like he's making a conscious choice to kind of marry the two things up. And I think now what we need to see is evolution back towards the way we were playing at the beginning of the season, which was genuinely quite interesting and quite refreshing. While also, you'd have thought now the off the pitch stuff being implemented enough that there's not going to be problems anymore. I don't think it's out of the reach of this squad to play much more to maintain those kind of possession principles, because that's the way we've tried to play all season, and still mix things up a little bit more on the pitch, not just in terms of individuals doing what they want, but actually the game plan, because we've seen it this season.
What you're saying there, Adam, out of all the people in sport, you're saying you want Watford to take a backward step to being what we were in the past?
One step back, two steps forward, maybe.
Thank you so much, Adam, for your time. And we'll get you back on again very, very soon.
Thank you.
And thank you, Michael, for sharing your inner thoughts during that match yesterday.
I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to redouble my efforts to support this team. I'm going to be noisy when I can be noisy, and I'm going to be positive when I can be positive. That's me. That's how I'm going to approach this. I think we're in the shtuck. We're in a miserable situation where if we're not very, very careful, we could get sucked in. But I think I'm going to remember when we lost in the playoff final to Palace. I stayed in the ground as long as I could. I said, right, I'm going to watch them lift that trophy, and I remember what this feels like, because it'll make it better when we're in their shoes, when we get promotion. I'm not trying to make myself out to be some sort of whatever, but I want to carry on getting something out of this season, this football club. It's about being a part of something. And what I want to do is, I keep telling myself I shouldn't worry about the bigger picture that I can't do anything about. I try to tell myself to detach, but I can't. I just can't, because I care so much about what the football club delivers for me personally, for my family, for us as friends, for the community on and off the pitch. It's just such a honking great part of my life that I cannot switch off from it. And it's important to me that it's healthy, and that the whole thing is healthy. So I'm going to redouble my efforts from the terraces where I can to make sure that I'm supporting this side and getting behind them. I don't think there's an issue with these players being nasty, bad eggs. I think Val has done that body of work. I think we can take that as read, as Adam said, that they know what's expected of them. So I'm going to try and get behind them, but I'm also going to keep an eye on what the hell is going on with the future. Seeing Moji Baia in the crowd is not something that sits nicely with me. It doesn't sit comfortably at all. I'm sure it doesn't sit comfortably with anyone. There is, I think we're, the future of Watford is interesting, to say the least. And I think I'm going to stay switched on and engaged and just keep an eye on the macro and the micro. I don't know, I'm saying this out loud just because I need to get it off my chest and say what I'm going to do. I love this football club. I love going to the games. It doesn't bother me if we lose. It does bother me how we lose. It doesn't bother me if we're not in the Premier League, but it does bother me if we're not in the Premier League because of mismanagement and poor decisions. I want us to be the best we can be as a football club, on and off the pitch. I just want to stand shoulder to shoulder as best I as best I can. So I know that's not what you were asking, John. You just wanted me to say bye, see you next week.
No,
so,
it's, yeah, well, I love a bit of a final thoughts from Michael Parkin when it comes to the end of a podcast. Yeah, so we might do a podcast. We're hopefully going to do a podcast the week with our good friends at the Women of Watford. So we'll see how that one pans out. But yeah, we stuff about this week because it is International Women's Week, Women's Day this week. So we're gonna do some stuff with them. As show their life as what, and of course we're back at Vicarage Road for two games in a week. What joy. Come on, you Horns.